Yeah, we'll do a spaghetti meditation. Watch your breath. It's a little harder in the evening. You get tired. Food doesn't help. But try to tie the mind to the breath and sort of relax into it. It's a quiet place and it's a quiet evening. Just relax into the breath. Go to the golden room. Warm golden sunlight illuminating the room like gold, like liquid gold. Just one thing, golden room. Outside the window, sky. Half the upper half of the window filled with sky, lower half filled with mountain. Your heart teacher, whoever that may be, seated in front of you. More. focus on your teacher's faith. And then upon their eyes. Now I'd like to try something. Make their eyes very small. Imagine that somehow their eyes are very far away. Very, very small. You sort of have to concentrate to keep your mind on very small, beautiful, loving eye looking at you. Hold it. We'll hold it for a few minutes. Observe how your mind starts to get tired and the quality of the holding starts to degrade over a few minutes time. So you're watching the small eyes. You just had a big pasta dinner. You're tired from yesterday and today. Observe how the quality of the eyes starts to degrade and you start to get tired. Slowly come out. Open your eyes. So we'll do a little bit of posture, okay? Thank you. So the second, the first meditation problem was what? Lelo. And then you overcame it with Deva Dumba Tsoa Shinzo, which means think about how cool meditation is, which will automatically lead you to want it, which will automatically lead you to do something, which will automatically lead you to get better at it. That's basically the flow. Which will get you to send Jopa, really, you see? Then that'll get you to sit down and try to meditate, okay? Well, they'll get you to the down here, to the start, okay? So far, we just got to the start. I taught this in Taipei. We only got to about here. But hopefully, we'll get further than that. What's the second problem? What's the second classical problem encountered by anyone who tries to meditate? Yeah, it's called Dhamma Jepa. Say Dhamma. Jepa. Dhamma. Jepa. Dhamma means the instructions that you got from your teacher. Jepa means forget. Okay? You forget the instructions. But as you know, those of you who studied it, it has a more particular meaning, which is you lose the object completely. Okay? So you go from the sun-filled room to the project you have to do when you get back next week. Okay? You just drop the object completely. You're off the object. Okay? And then you have to use the iron chain. Okay? What's in his left hand, Chamba, is bringing the mind back to the object. Okay? And it's no coincidence that it's an iron chain. Okay? So it's like really hard. You have to pull it back. Okay? Pull the mind back to the object that you were supposed to be meditating. Okay? Personally, I find an elliptical orbit is useful. My mind is headed off towards next week's project, you know? And you can try to jump, you know, iron hook, a chain. You can try to pull it back diametrically, and somehow it doesn't work for me. I like to build up some momentum and like a frisbee and let it, like a boomerang, let it come around, come back. So I don't try to fight it like this. I'm like, oh yeah, we have that project next week. Yeah, we have that project. What are you going to work on? Yeah, we got to do that and that and that. Yeah. And to do that, you're going to have to sit down. Yeah, no, we got to finish up this week. Yeah, and then to finish up this week, you're going to have to finish up the first few days. And it means I'm going to have to be coming back to the session I'm on. And then maybe, where is that golden room? You see? Yeah. I bring it around. I like to bring it around on its own impetus and let it come back like swinging a chain, and then it flies back rather than trying to fight the tendency. Make it part of your distraction. Trick the distraction. Yeah, we should think about next week. And to get there, we gotta think about the end of this week. To get there, we gotta start here. And then, you know, instead of saying, come back, okay? Try it. It's interesting. So that's Jemba. Which is what? Is that the fifth antidote? Okay, so the fix for the second meditation problem is the fifth antidote, because we had three extra antidotes for Lelo, because we had wanting, trying, and getting good at it. Okay? Got it? You all right? All right. Which leads me, I think I'll go to... Okay, I'm going to mix you up. How do you get here? Which power gets you here? Which power gets you to start meditating? Yeah, tapa, shruti, listening. Listening, they don't even have it on the chart. Okay, I don't think so. Before you get to this first number one, you have to go to a class and the teacher teaches about meditation, and And then you know what to do, and you know how to sit down and things like that. Okay, so to get to the sitting down, you have to go to a class, and the person has to explain to you how to meditate. Okay, so that's the first of the six powers is hearing, meaning learning. Okay, then you get to, this is Gyundi Jopa, okay, up here, number 9. It'll probably say 9-2 down here at the bottom, right? 9 meaning it's the ninth picture. 2 meaning it's the second of the 9 states. It says keeping the mind on the object with brief continuity, okay? So you don't get to the second state of meditation until you get to the first bend in the road on the left. Okay, you want to show these guys? Over there? Okay, so this is, where is it? Number 2 is way up here, all right? Where you've got some brief continuity by here. By the time you get here, you have some flow on the object, right? You're able to hold it for brief periods of time. They are still less than the time off the object, okay? It's not bad, okay? It's progress. This was a fly on the cow pie down here. And then by the time you're up here, you've got some continuity in the object, okay? Let's see what Chijan Rinpoche chose to put between those two. This chart was designed by Chijan Rinpoche, who was the student of Pabok Rinpoche, and he's the tutor of the current Dalai Lama, okay? So, and my teacher's teacher. So, let's see what he's chosen to put on the chart. Here's a, number 2 was the chain for either pulling back directly or swinging back, okay? And now we have to talk about this hook. I forget, in Tibetan it's called chakyu, say chakyu.
Chakyu.
So chakyu can mean any kind of hook. Like a fishing hook or a... Sometimes they say jindan la chakyu shak. Say jinda,
la,
chakyu,
sha.
Set the hook on a sponsor for the monastery. That's a common use of chakyu in a monastery. Kind of funny. What is a shakyu? Yeah, that little curly hook-like vowel under a Tibetan letter. It's called, that's the oo sound. And it's called a foot hook, shakyu. So q means hook. So this is a chakyu. Chak means iron or steel. So chakyu, he's got a chakyu in his right hand. He's got a chain in his left hand. Okay. So the right hand is chakyu. It's a hook. And on an elephant, I believe you hook it under the ear. And their skin is so thick that you have to really pull for them to even feel it. They don't even feel it. But you. You have to jam it really hard into their ear, like an inch or two, before they even feel it, because their skin is so thick. So, and the ear is sensitive. So, to turn the elephant, or to get its attention, you jam the chakyu into the ear. Okay. In our case, in meditation, chakyu refers to shishin. Say shishin.
Shishin.
It's like shishin, shishin me. It's like thank you. Shishin means how did we translate it? What's number 2 say? Awareness. Okay, we'll call it awareness. We talked about it in Phoenix, but those of you who weren't there, Shishin is described in the scripture as setting aside a corner of your mind to watch the rest of your mind as it meditates. Okay? Setting aside a corner of your mind to watch the rest of your mind as it meditates. So, Shishin, for example, might be used to, it's a detector. It's like a smoke alarm. Okay? I like to compare it to a smoke alarm. So, the function of a smoke alarm is not to put out a fire, right? It's simply to alert you to the fact that there is a fire. Okay, so Shishin's job is not to do anything except set off an alarm that what? In this case, you're off the object. Okay? So Shishin detects
that you haven't thought about the golden room for about 5 minutes. Okay, like if you have a slow sheshen, yeah. So hopefully you develop your sheshen. You know, hopefully you make it more sensitive. You know, there's more sensitive smoke detectors and less sensitive smoke detectors. So hopefully you develop your sheshen strong enough that it can alert you that you're no longer on the object. Okay. For me, I don't know about you, it's just kind of a coincidence that I notice that I'm off the object and I wander back onto it kind of by accident and then go off the other way. So anyway, Sheshin's job is to detect that you are not on the object. Okay. Usually, it can detect other things that we'll talk about. But at this point, he's got Sheshin. Which do you think goes first? The left chain or the right hook? Yeah, the hook is used first, right? First the alarm goes off. And then the... Jemba is the left hand, the chain is like the water sprinkler thing that goes off. The smoke alarm sets off the water sprinkler. So the detector is Sheshin. The detector is like, oh, I'm off the object. And then Jemba kicks in and pulls you back to the object, okay? So you wouldn't have a pullback without an alarm. There has to be an alarm go off in your mind that says, we're not on the object anymore. And then you have to coax or beat or fight or battle or trick the mind back to the object, okay? And that's Jemba, all right? Recalling the object or bringing the mind back to the object. I'm going to go through the other numbers up to Gyundu Jopa, slight continuity, right? And let's see what he chose to put in there. It'll be a little different than the text, but let's see. Okay. He also edited this text. This was a transcript. This was a recording taken on, you know, rice paper. And then it took him, I think it took him close to 20 years to edit it. He worked on it steadily for 20 years, something like that. And the day it came out, it was a classic. It was carved the day it came out, which is very unusual. So anyway, since he did both, they should match pretty well. So we got number one is putting the mind into meditation. Number two is bringing the mind back. Number three is the alarm. And then number four is, let me see here. Lanti Kupa Tuk Top Tuk. The six bends in this path. The six bends in the road represent the six powers. Okay. Dhruv, Dhan, Jarwa, Le, Dhambo Tepe Topso. Yeah, Dhambo Tepe Topso. It's very, the carving's not very clear, okay? Dhambo Tepe Topso means the first one is. What is that? Dhammo Tibet Dhamso. The first power is? Learning, listening, okay? Dila Tene Semne Dhammo Drupayin. Due to the first power, you are able to attain the first of the nine levels, okay? You are able to attain the first of the nine levels. That's what he said under the elephant, okay? That's what note number four says. Right? Number five. Langbo Sem Dang Kadong Nakbo Chingwa Tsun. Langbo Sem. Langbo means elephant. So what's that say? The elephant is your mind. Okay? Langbo Sem. And then this is where this whole chart takes off from. There was an ancient scripture that said the mind is like an elephant tied to the stick of your meditation object with your Jemba and Sheshin. Okay? So this note says the elephant is your mind and the color black on the elephant represents Qingwa, which is what? Qingwa Tsun means represents Qingwa. Dullness, okay? Dullness. We were exploring dullness at the end of that last meditation. Not really. And that's what you have to do. We had a meditation program, 15 years ago in Connecticut? And we purposely overfed everyone. And we fed them very bad food. It was a big plot. We planned it for weeks in Nancy Karen's living room. And we had the perfect person to, execute the plan, who loved pizza. And so we overfed everybody on pizza, and then we took them in the room and we meditated. And everybody got chingwa. Okay? So chingwa means like very gross sort of dullness of the mind. Okay? Sleepiness of the mind. It can be brought on by not getting enough sleep, by traveling long distances just before a meditation retreat, by working on cabins for 3 months before. You can get it by overeating, okay? These are ways to get dullness. All right? Okay. Let's keep going on the chart. I want you to know the chart so you can use it at home. Jel, Choa Dung, Karang Napo, Gopatsun, okay? Say, Jel, Choa Dung, Karo, Napo, Gopatsun. Jel is the literary form of dew, which means what? Yeah, in the colloquial, the ratak drops off and it becomes pew, which means monkey. Okay, but the median form is dew and the ancient form is Jel. Okay, so Jel means monkey. Choa means, how did I translate it? What's number six there? Say again. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the monkey represents distraction, and the black color of the monkey represents agitation. What's the distinction between distraction and agitation? That's what we need to talk about, okay? Not all distractions are agitation, okay? Not all distractions are agitation, gopa, because gopa is defined as a special kind of distraction, which is towards a pleasant object, okay? So 90% of all distraction from the object, as opposed to sleepiness, okay? Sleepiness is just a degrading of the quality of the state of mind. Distraction is where your mind is flies. The word choa means to fly off, like uzer tu in the sadhana. Light flies off into the 10 directions, choa. So choa means for the mind to fly away from the object in the way that light would be scattered. Scattered, you could say scattered is not bad, okay? But not all scattering is towards a desirable object, you see? Why? There are two other classic types of objects, okay? Which are? Say again?
Things you don't like?
Yeah, things and people. Usually people you don't like. Or it could be you could draw it towards the coldness of your room, you see? You could start getting distracted by thoughts about how miserable your room is and how cold you feel in your room. Okay, that would be choa but not gupa. That would be distraction, but not what we call agitation, because agitation is classically aimed at a desirable thing, okay? So the monkey represents all kinds of distraction. The blackness of the monkey represents distraction towards a desirable object, which accounts for 95% of distraction, and that's the point. In the scripture, they say, we concentrate on agitation or attraction towards a desirable object because that's 95% of your distraction, okay? Which would include planning for the next day or the next week or the next life, okay? So planning is maybe a very common distraction, right? Food is a very common distraction. Sex is a very common distraction. Things you want to buy or things you want to do is a very common distraction. He cites memories of classical folk dance performances, which nowadays would be television or movies. I think movies, okay? Remembering movies, music, you know, a song running through your head. We were talking about doing music tonight, and we decided it'd probably be in your head for 8 days, and you wouldn't want Frosty the Snowman in your head for 8 days. So that's the most classical form of distraction, is towards nice things. What's another? We got nice things, terrible things. Then they say virtuous things, okay? They make a separate classification about distraction in the form of thinking about something nice that you have to do, like a Dharma project, okay? Like the Spanish mission sanctuary, adobe with arches and Spanish tiles and gardens and lawns and a full regulation soccer field. No, to attract the Spanish American population. Seriously. And basketball courts. And somebody threw in a small cafe with internet. But all right. That's another half acre you gotta pay. Okay, so anyway, these are good things to talk about, but not while you're meditating on the golden rule. Okay? That's the third kind of distraction. Okay, like it's a virtuous thing, it's a holy thing. But in meditation, a holy thing that's not your object becomes an evil thing. Okay? It's wrong to think of a virtuous project as destructive during a meditation, because you're supposed to have only one object, and that's the golden rule. And that's not a basketball court. Okay? All right. So that's an interesting distinction to make. But the black color of the monkey means, the reason they chose to make the monkey all black was that distraction towards things you'd like, especially plans and girls and movies and music and other things that you enjoy. Okay. These are the two great classic enemies of meditation. Okay, and all meditation consists of threading a middle way between these two ditches. We came down. We took a different road here. Okay, which was more icy and snow covered. We didn't make it. We got like halfway down a hill, and we went off the road like four times, and then we decided we just got to get out and call somebody. So we got out and called somebody. Then this guy shows up, and he says, "I can drive your car down for you." And we're like, "That no thanks." And he said, "You know those big snowdrifts off to the side?" We said, "Yeah." He said, "They are covering very deep, dangerous ditches, you know." And we're like, "Okay, we'll just wait for the tow truck, you know." So meditation is the same, okay? On one side is dullness, the deep ditch of dullness. And then on the other side is attraction towards something nice that you want to think about, like food. And then your meditation means driving down that slick road and trying not to slide off to either ditch. You see what I mean? That's meditation. And it's a constant correction of the wheel. And we were talking about it in Phoenix. If you watch a person drive, even a bad driver, they are constantly correcting. A new driver, totally new driver, first day they ever drove, they go like this. And they don't come back. And then you grab the wheel. We had a monk in India. We were trying to teach him to drive. And then every time he looked out the window, he'd go like this. It was really scary. But an experienced driver, there's this constant, what do you call it? Unconscious correction process. They can talk on their phone, and they can be fooling with the radio or fighting with their wife, and the hands are still moving back and forth. So what we seek is a state of meditation where the corrections are constant. And you're not even aware of it. You see, you are constantly correcting. And we'll talk about it, you know. there will be a tendency to get dull. And then you will do certain internal practices within your mind to stoke it up a bit, to raise the level of the mind, which means turning to the right? Then that will go too far, and you will start thinking about lunch. And then you'll do another practice to bring the mind down a little bit, like think about death for a minute, and then you'll get the mind too depressed, and you'll get sleepy. And then you'll have to bring it up again. And then there's this constant correcting to avoid these two classic problems of meditation. Okay, these are the two classic problems. We will try to spend this week exploring those two problems. Okay. All right. What's number 7? Dine semne dumba har meche yume dang che chungi kepar gupani. Kapani, Teshe ki betsu, top shuk ke chechun ki keparo. So you see here, he's in the first bend of the road. You can see a fire. It's called flames, what do you call it? Flames of, tongues of flame. The Tibetan says tongues of flame. So here, this represents this first big fire here. Represents the intensity or the power that you need to assert in these two corrective measures. The alarm mind and the pullback mind. Okay, so at this point in your meditative practice, the corrections are gross. You know? And they're muscled. The corrections are muscled. Like there's people who do yoga that way, right? They muscle through it. And it's everything's abrupt. The movements are abrupt and they're muscling instead of like gliding, you know. And it's probably a necessary thing to get to the gliding. That for your first 6 months of yoga you're muscling everything. So this great fire represents the fact that at this point the corrective process is a struggle, and the corrections are big and blatant and overdone. Okay? It's like, and then you're going off the road before you, you know, what do you call it? You crank it like that. Okay? So that's what, and then he says, down here, he says, you'll notice that as we proceed along the path, the flames get smaller and smaller. And then suddenly they're all gone. Okay? Which means by level 8, okay, it becomes effortless. Okay, the correction process is automatic. You are driving and talking on your cell phone, and you don't notice your hands moving. It's on autopilot. What do you call that thing that you like to do?
Cruise
control. Okay, it's cruise control. So when the flames finally get smaller and smaller, less effort expended in correction. Until beyond this point, there's no flames, okay? There's no effort. The correction process becomes unconscious, all right? I mean, hopefully you're not unconscious. Yeah. Let's check. Let's do some more meditation. As the day proceeds, on a typical retreat, for most people, and it's not always the same for everybody, but normally you should shorten the length of each session as you go through the day. So the last session in a long retreat, in the last session in the evening might be 5 minutes, even for a very experienced person. Okay, a nice 5 minute intense meditation. I'll tell you, I'm guessing something, okay? You guys are thinking, when is he going to do the real meditation? You know, you're thinking that. You're thinking, is he going to get to half an hour? Is he going to get to an hour? Are we just going to? Is this some kind of warm up? And I said, no. This is an ancient alternative method of meditating, where you just keep going back for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, like 18 times throughout the day. And check it out and see if you want to try to do it for a couple months or a year or something. Instead of trying to sit there for a half hour, an hour, do a bunch of small sessions. What you'll discover is a tendency towards continuity across the sessions. Okay? If you do an hour at 9 o'clock on Tuesday and then do an hour at 9 o'clock on Wednesday, you don't get this feeling of coming back to a place where you've been. You get the feeling of like starting over, okay? So check it out. This method makes you feel like you're meditating all day and taking breaks for meals. You see? You feel like you've been in the golden room. You're coming back to a place that you just went to the bathroom and you came back to the golden room. You see what I mean? And you'll feel a continuity across the sessions, which is very desirable. Then you get some kind of intense progress coming. So try it. Just check it out. I know it's not what everybody does, but it is a tradition. And what's cool is that the quality of the meditation doesn't degrade. If you try an hour or even a half hour, it will degrade. I don't know anyone who can sustain an hour. I know lots of people who sit for an hour. But I honestly don't know anyone who can sustain an hour's meditation. So try, rather than fighting to get to go for an hour, try 3 or 4 sessions during the day and space them out and see how you like it. Just try it and see how you like it. So here we go. They should get shorter as the day goes on. Go back to your breath, very, very silent. You can't unzip your jacket. You can't shift your body. You can't even sniffle if you're focused only on your breath. Come to the golden room, small room, windows on several sides, and golden light. Try to make it a, I don't know how to describe it, like a darker gold, a warm gold, like a molten gold. Okay? That kind of light is bathing the room, like the last light of the day, golden. Outside the window and the blue sky in the upper half of the window and mountain on the lower half of the window. The Lama sitting in front of you, and then they reach out and take your hands. So in your lap, you're holding your Lama's hands, and that's all. Just focus on the hands until we stop. Okay? You're just focusing on the touch of their hand on your hand.
stay there. You don't need to do anything. There's no discussion going on. No one's going to move. Just stay there with their hand on your hand. Stay there in the feeling of that. You have nothing else to do tonight. Coax the mind back to the object, detect it leaving the object. Notice which kinds of distractions you tend to have. Virtuous project, someone who hurts you, or something you want, food, movie, music. Okay, 2 more minutes. Try really hard to keep your mind on the hands. Relax, slowly come back. There's a very, Volkovich is very insistent that you should end the meditation while it's going well. Okay, so you should end the meditation feeling like you would have liked to have stayed a little longer. Okay, that's a trick of the trade. You used to have a gold miner, like this old pioneer man gold miner in our Boy Scout trip. Like he was 120 or something. And his name was Mr. Curry, but we called him Fudd. And he'd say, tricks to the trade, boys. And then he'd teach us some incredible knot or something that you can use for a backpack. And
that you use for mules to carry gold. Or...
So I like tricks of the trade. So one of the tricks of the trade is stop while it's good, okay? Like, and it's hard to do because you want to suck some more out of it, but stop. And then you want to go back. You'll feel happy to go back, okay? I thought I'd take questions for a couple minutes and then let you go early, then maybe 9:30. And I'll take questions for a while, and then I thought to send you to bed with a little bit of emptiness dessert. All right, so we would do like 10 minutes out of the, a few minutes more of emptiness. But I thought if you have any questions, yeah.
What if your mind is agitated, but not towards something terrible? Like if you have restlessness, you can just like meditate on death because your mind is too heavy and quiet it down, meditate on something like
heavy and sad, but if you're restless because of some unhappiness, like something very depressing, that I mean, this meditation on death is making it worse. Yeah, okay. So we're getting into the subject of the... These are beautiful, it's a beautiful question, and it's a beautiful art or a skill of what do you do if you have an extreme form of either one, the elephant or the monkey, right? What if you have an extreme form of agitation? You start thinking about something you want, or you have the opposite problem, right? And suppose your agitation has been triggered by already depressed thoughts, and you're telling me to bring my mind down further. What do you want me to do about that? So, antidotes within the mind are divided into three kinds. I can say, I mean, it's not formally presented that way, but you can derive that. One means with a little bit of without leaving the object, you can bring the level of the mind up or down very gently. Without leaving the object. It requires a partial leaving of the object, I guess. But you don't let go of the object. So you're still holding the object, but you are consciously trying to raise the mind or lower the mind. Okay, if the mind is too depressed or the mind is too agitated. Okay? Well, the other is where, without opening your eyes, you drop the object for a while, and you go to another brief meditation, which will raise or lower the mind. And then drastic means are you open your eyes and you throw water on your face, okay? No, there is such a thing. You don't break your kiltrum, you don't break your meditation posture, but you open your eyes and you look around and you slap yourself and you look at how much time you got left and, you know, those are really drastic. So I think what's interesting for all of us is what are the sort of subtle sub-meditations you can do to raise or lower the... When I say raise or lower, I mean pep up the mind or calm it down a bit because it's too... It's getting a little dull or it's getting a little too frisky. Okay? Like how do you keep it... It's like a... What do you call it? A bubble float? Or how do you keep it at the right altitude? You know, so I'll give you some classic ones and then we'll talk more about it, okay? Because to me, this is the most important question. That question is the most important question. You know? My mind keeps going to some song or some project I have to do, right? So how do I bring it back? How do I calm the mind? Bring it down a bit. And yeah, thinking about people who've died in your life is a good way to bring it down very fast. It's like my brother died. And I just have to think about him and I'm not thinking about lunch anymore. It takes less than 10 seconds. And my mind is down, you know? So the opposite one is how to pep the mind up. You could just think about something inspiring to you. You know, you could think about the Dalai Lama, you could think about good things you've done in your life, or good people you've seen in your life, or inspiring things. I like the subject of Geshe Michael. I like to think about the cool things he did in China or something. And I think this is one case where that's healthy. You know, you could say, in the scripture they say, think about what a special person you are. Okay? Like I'm at a meditation retreat, you know, you know, how many people really got the transmission of emptiness correctly? Maybe one in a million in this country. Okay. About, it averages right now, it's running at about 1 in a million. So you are one person out of a million who made it here to get that transmission, which came directly from the greatest Lama of Tibet. He was ranked number one debater out of 10,000 debaters the year he graduated. He was number one, you know. So you're getting, and his teacher wrote the book, you know. So you're getting like a really good transmission. And this is the first one that's in English from that lineage. So you've got to be a little special to be here. You just think about that. You think how special you are. And it's a good kind of special. It's good to think about, you know. Statistically, which makes it undeniable, right? It's not subjective, it's objective. Out of 200 million people, I'm one out of a million people who made it here. And I'm hearing these things. And you've got to be a super extraordinary person just to have made it over the road here. You know, you are special. You know, and you can't deny it. I mean, the numbers are there. You can't deny it. How many people got here instead of on Facebook or on watching a video tonight? Or, by the way, today is New Year's, right? It's 1111, right? And in Tibet, the first day of the year is a, what do you call it? It's a sign of how the year's going to go. How you spend the first day of the year is extremely important in the Tibetan tradition, because it's a sign of how your whole life's going to go, and especially the next year. You know, so it's just, so is it kind of special that you spent the first day of the year, you know, all day talking about emptiness and meditation and, you know, being in one of the last clean, unpolluted, forested areas on the whole planet of the Earth? Because I travel a lot. I know how many places are left. And there's not, this is like one of the handful. So, you know, you're pretty special. And it's a special day, and it's a special way that you spent the day. And you're going to have a special year and a special life. So that already, you feel brighter, right? So if you feel yourself getting tired or depressed, they say in the text, they say, just if you made it this far, you've got to be special. So just think about how special you are, okay? Then you'll get too special. You know? Say, yeah, I am like the only American. You know, and then you gotta, I'm the only American guest who's gonna die. You know? And then you calm down a bit, Geshe Michael. You know? Okay, and then you'll get all sad and depressed, and you say, "No, but it is." No, that's the gross correction process, and then you'll get to where you're just going like that, and then you get to a place where your hands don't move anymore, and the car is straight. Okay, any more questions?
So, what do you do when very strong emotions come up when you think of your object?
She said, what do you do when you get very strong emotions coming up when you're thinking about your meditation object? If it's anger, because you're meditating on the last person who hurt you.
That's not what I meant.
I'm talking about me. I usually do the four powers of confession right there before I go anywhere. During the what? During the second one, I start to consider how dangerous it was that I had that anger. And then I try to think about why I was angry. And then I get angry again during the confession. But anyway, I think it's an interesting question. In my mind, the question for me is, if the teacher's looking at me and I'm feeling these intense feelings of love, then that becomes a second object.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's very touchy. You know, then I've lost my object. You see? Because I'm concentrating on the emotion or the love, the devotion. And I've struggled with that question. I think you can imbue the eyes with love and you're okay. I don't think you're going to have... I don't think it's a distraction. I've decided it's not a distraction. There's an intense... I think you can have an intense feeling of love and not lose the eyes. So I don't think it's a problem.
No. So if it gets physical.
If it gets physical.
Well, you know, like crying.
Oh, like crying.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing, but again, it's one of those good things which is a distraction, right? So then you might want to back off that emotion. Okay. I wouldn't say try to lower the devotion. I would say try to control the crying. Because the devotion, I can't imagine that devotion could be too much devotion could be a problem. I wouldn't mind. I don't think it's I think you could pre-plan a move of the object deeper into devotion from the eyes, or something like that. So I would call it not losing the object. The devotion is more important than holding the eyes. And it's still the object for me. I've struggled with that. It's like counting the breath. Is one the breath? You know? What am I doing? Breath one. Breath two. Right? I mean, it's two objects, you know? So, yeah, you have to struggle with that. I think, yeah, you have to make sure the counting doesn't become a second object.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. When you talk about using the object and you're focusing on someone's face,
yeah.
Will you, the face becomes pleasant.
Yeah.
The shape is still there, silhouette, but is that losing the object?
That's dullness. That's chingwa.
I find when you talk about, for instance, the hands, that was a completely different one, and you lose them.
Yeah.
But
good.
The face, it just gets.
Yeah, that gets into another question, which is a good play. Let's go there. It's an interesting fact that you cannot have the third problem of meditation until you're able to hold the object. Okay? You cannot encounter the third problem of meditation until you're able to have fixation on the object. What is the third problem of meditation? We've only done two. We did not wanting to meditate. And then we did losing the object completely. But what's the third? The third problem of meditation is
dullness
and agitation. Okay, it's a dual problem, which is kind of a contradiction in a meditation class. You know, it's a two-pointed needle. But it's either the mind gets too low or the mind gets too high. Okay. But it assumes that you're still on the object. So what it's what you were describing. It's the silhouette without the face. Or, you know, it's the hands, but you're kind of losing it. So those are... To have the monkey, black monkey, and the black elephant problem, you have to be on the object. If you're off the object, you won't have those problems. You can't be dull on lunch. You see what I mean? You gotta be on the object to have a problem with the quality of the object. So what you're describing is good. You're describing the third problem, which is you haven't lost the object, but the quality of the attention is degraded. Yeah.
So related to that, if for instance the problem with the face is I don't have a photographic memory, so I can't.
Yeah.
But for instance with the hands, I didn't lose that, so should I choose?
Okay, that's a new question. Okay, now he said I have trouble. I have the same trouble. I have a friend, I mentioned in the last class, I have a friend, I lived next to Trijang Rinpoche for a while. And stupidly, I didn't go over to see him because I didn't want to bother him. But my friends went, and they asked him, could you draw a Buddha for us to keep? And he just went like this, you know? And I had a copy, I don't know where it is, I had a copy of that drawing, and it's perfect. And he had some kind of photographic memory of what, visual memory, which I don't have. You know, I can't draw the face of my teacher. I've tried, I can't do it. You know, I see it, and I understand it, and I get everything's good, but I can't sit down and draw it, you know? So I think that's what you're describing. Like, but the hands, what he's saying, what's your name again? Richard, yeah, what Richard is saying is that the hands he can remember. I mean, the touch of the hands is irrefutable, something very beautiful, and you don't forget the touch of someone's hands. And I can remember the touch of my teacher's hands. I know what they feel like. That I can describe perfectly. If I could draw it, I could draw it. You see what I mean? And that's fine. So his question was, should I go for the object that is more comfortable and compelling to me, or should I fight my tendencies and try to improve my ability to visualize the face? And the text says, this is very interesting and very important, I think. The text says, normally stick with something which is very attractive to you, because you'll be better at it, you know? So as far as the parts of your lama, in the beginning, I mean, for, I would say all the time, choose something which is compelling to you. The selection of a meditation object is a high art, and it's a very serious consideration that you have to go through. Because once you pick it, you shouldn't switch it easily. You know, you should spend weeks or months on the same object. So once you, the selection should be very, what do you call it?
Judicious.
Yeah, like, select carefully, because then you should keep it for a long time. And the guideline in the scripture is select something which is very attractive to you, virtuous and attractive. You know? So your lama's hands, the touch of your lama's hands might be a very nice object, a good object, because you're already very attracted to them. And that's what they say. Of course, there will come times when your lama says, I want you to do this particular meditation on emptiness, and it's not natural, and it's not comfortable, and it's hard. And then you got to not wimp out. And then, you know, they'll give you a meditation assignment, and they'll say, work on this proof of emptiness. And then you just have to fight and get there. The objects that you fight for and achieve turn out much sweeter than the objects which were attractive and easy. I predict, you know. I had that experience with logic. You know, like my teacher forced me to learn logic, and I hated it. And now, like we're doing this text, it's the most exquisite thing in the world. But I never could have done it without like a couple of years of real struggle of something I wasn't attracted to at all, you know. So, but the text says start with something you love, and until you get strong in your meditation, and then switch to objects which are difficult for you. Maybe one more, and then I got to give you a little emptiness to go to bed on.
My question is, in order to focus on the object, I often need to imagine the person in an experience I've had with them, in a photo, something like that. Two-part question. So is that related to the level that I'm on, or does that degrade the focus? Like, when I lose the object, in order to bring it back, I have to remember the experience, some kind of sense perception or something, and I'm wondering if that is really focusing on the object.
So I'll repeat her question just to make sure everybody heard it. And I usually rephrase it in my own way to twist it my own way. This is a debating thing. But she wanted to know, let's say she's supposed to be meditating on her lama's face, and then to make it strong or to come back to it strongly, she has to switch over to an actual experience she had with her lama. To recapture the face and then bring it back to the golden room. So is that a loss of, is that okay as a method? I think it's great. I think that's a redirection thing rather than a fighting thing. So you go to an experience that you enjoyed with them. And that, or she even mentioned a photograph that she particularly enjoyed of them. So that, I do that sometimes. I keep a photograph in my six times book, which we have to do. But that would be a virtuous distraction.
Yeah.
Definitely. Go to a pleasant experience you had with them. What do you call it? What do you do on a computer when you used to push F something and you captured the screen capture. Do a screen capture. Go to their face in a pleasant experience, capture the face and bring it back to the golden moon. That's a good technique. That's fine. It is a loss of the object. But it's fine because you were already off. Okay. All right. I'm going to do just 5-10 minutes of, just for good luck. Okay. It's the first day of the year. It's a good way to go to bed. I'm trying to take it easy the first 2 days. Okay. And then we'll push. But so many people are so exhausted, especially Diamond Mountain people. You're like, that looks really amazing. They just burned it really hard for months, and you know they're gonna get sick, and we need to give them a couple of days of recovery. The China people burned it for a month, and then before that, where were we? I don't remember. Can't even remember. It's all a blur. We were somewhere.
You were somewhere.
We were somewhere. It was Germany.
No.
Yeah, it was Puerto Vallarta.
Oh,
yeah, okay. All right. Okay. We just finished those three different ways of looking at me, right? And then we said, oh, it's only the third one that needs to be smashed, okay? Which is the actively believing that you come from yourself. Right? It's the third perception of who Michael is that is the one which is to be denied or which is to be canceled or fought against, which is gakja. Right? Gak, by the way, means stop. Ja means that which is to be. Gakja means that which is to be denied or to stop. So it's the me which under consideration, right? Matak machepa mayimba. Under active consideration of whether it's coming from itself or not, I decide it's coming from itself. That's gakja. That's the Michael that doesn't exist. Okay? If you question me, does that Michael come from Michael? And if I say yes, then that Michael is the gakja. Okay? The Michael I'm thinking of then is the thing that doesn't exist and never did exist, and that's what emptiness is empty of. Okay? That's gakja. Third one. What was the second one, since you look so... What do they call that? Clueless. What was the second one? That was John Foley in the mirror. You know, you're shaving, and you're like, okay, John's there. And, you know, you got to pay attention or you're going to cut your lip off. He's there, it's okay, you can shave his face. That's John. That's an unexamined, you know, nobody's worried about whether he's coming from himself or not, you're just trying not to cut your lip off. Okay. Then the first one, that was of a real sage, is looking at their arm and saying, you know, it could have been light if I were just a little more respectful of life. You see, it could have been light. And that's how they perceive Mike. Okay. All right. Now they distinguish between Rigpe Gakcha and Lamke Gakcha. Say Rigpe Gakcha. Rigpe Gakcha. Lamke Gakcha. There are two kinds of gakcha. Okay. One never existed in the first place, and that's the Mike who's coming from Mike. The Mike who's coming from his own side. Okay? The Mike who's Mike without me there to make it Mike. The pen that's a pen without me making it a pen. That's one kind of gacha. Rigpa means it's the kind of self-existent thing that we deny through careful thinking. Careful thinking overcomes our belief in that mic. Okay? Careful reflection and instruction overcomes our tendency to believe in that mic. Okay? That's the Rigpa gacha. Langi gacha means something which is overcome through the practice of the lung, which means what? Pa. Ever since I went to Australia, I have to say pa, right? Not pan. So, Lamki Gakchas, do they exist? Like anger, desire, jealousy, hatred. These exist, okay? They are overcome through the practice of the path. So the distinction between the two gakchas is that the first one that never existed anyway and has caused you every wrinkle on your face and all your gray hairs. They have come, no, really, they have come to being worried about and protecting, defending a mic that didn't exist in the first place. Okay? That's where I got them, all right? And all the wrinkles on our face and all the troubles in your life have come through defending a mic who was never there anyway. Slamming the brakes on for a leaf that was crossing the road and smashing your head. Okay? And then Langi Gakchas, those exist. Anger, jealousy, desire. These are overcome through the path. They are both things to be overcome. The first one never was there anyway, which is the big, what do you call it? Irony of life. Ultimately, your practice is aimed at fighting an enemy who was never there. Is the belief in the enemy there? Yeah. And that's a langi gacha. Okay? That's real. That exists. Okay. That we could debate. That'd be a nice debate. Okay. Shankiki, we're not going to go too long. Don't worry. And I hate people who yawn. I'm just telling you, okay? I had a student who, they would sit in the front right there and they'd go, ha! Okay, so just kind of like, all right. Thank you, Nang So De, Jesu Dung Ne, Nge Se Su Nyambo Tabu, De Nga Shemba Yin. This is difficult. Shankiki Nangso means the way mic appears to the state of mind you were born with, right? We talked about what? Down to bugs, down to dreams. That should be in Tyler's song too. Down to bugs, down to dreams. You got that? Down to bugs, down to dreams. Okay. We're always looking for new songs for albums. The way mic appears to the state of mind I was born with, right? And then Jesu Dung means to, what do you call it? There's a word in English. You fall for it. Jesu Dung literally means to follow it. But in English we say you fall for it, right? To fall for the way Mike seems to be to the state of mind you were born with, Jesu Dung. And then, Nge Se Su, I ate breakfast. Okay? Nge Se Su, Nyamba Tabu, to think that, just thinking I ate breakfast is to grasp onto a mic who's not there. That's called Narshemba. Narshemba means to fall for me. You know? To fall for a me. To fall for a me? Okay? Like then you're just to say I ate breakfast. Okay? How often are you wrapped up in the gacha? I'll ask you a question. Let's stop on that, okay? Let's stop right there. I'll ask you a question. How many things in the world work? Do cars work? A car that works sometimes doesn't work, okay? In my mind. You know, give me a bottle of a headache remedy and tell me this is a headache remedy. but it only works half the time, and then still call it a headache remedy? No thanks. You see? Because the times it doesn't work is so, it's so painful. You see? A car which doesn't work every time you turn the key, you can't call it. In my mind, you can't call it a car. Try to get used to that, okay? You have grown up in a world, you have grown up in a life where the things around you don't work because they only work sometimes. And don't get on a plane if they tell you that it's going to fall down half the time. That's not a plane, okay? You're going to fight with me. You're going to say, that's a defective plane. That's a lousy plane. That's a poorly made plane. I say it's not a plane. Get used to it, okay? It's just not a plane. If it doesn't fly you from one place to another safely, it's not a plane. It's just a death trap or something. You see what I mean? It's an occasional death trap. Call it that, but don't call it a plane. A plane means a functioning thing which flies you from one city to another safely. Okay? That's what a plane is. If it falls down ever, then it's not a plane. Just try to struggle with that. This is where I get into planet B and planet A, okay? There's a whole planet of people called planet A. They live on a planet, 6 billion of them. And they put up with this crap, you know? It's amazing. It's unthinkable. They will buy a bottle of pills knowing that half of them don't work. And they won't even ask for half their money back, you know? They'll take a bottle of aspirin from the store. They'll pay the full price. They'll take it home. And if you ask them to their face, you know, how many of these are going to work? They'll say half, maybe. I hope. You know? And then you're like, planet B people are like, what's wrong with you? I mean, wake up already. You know? Why do you put up with a world where stuff only works sometimes? You know? Like, why do you go to a job that might work out or might not work out? You know, why do you buy a house that might make money or might lose money? You know, why do you enter a relationship with a woman or a man and know that it might not work out half the time? You know, why not just enter a better relationship? On our planet, we wouldn't even call that a relationship. If you didn't know if it was going to work out, we wouldn't call it a relationship. We'd call it, like, I don't know, gambling or something. Everything you do is like gambling here. Everything on your planet is like gambling. You're really strange people, you know? And because the ironic thing is you put up with it, you know? You don't complain anymore. You say it's good enough. You know, my car starts most days. That's okay. And, you know, it breaks sometimes, and I just be graceful with it. And then religiosity to you is gracefulness in the face of fuck-ups, you know? You know, the car breaks and I try to stay calm and I'm a good person. You know, and we're like, Planet B people are like, why don't you just get a car that doesn't break and you don't have to be a nice person? You know? You know, we don't understand. How many things in your life don't work?
The water.
Everything. Those are all gotcha. Okay? Try to grasp that. They're all gotcha. None of them even exist. Try to grasp it, okay? They don't even exist, okay? If an object in your life only works sometimes, if a car only works sometimes, it's not a car, okay? Try to get it. It's so frustrating to come from planet B and talk to planet A people. It's a gotcha. That car is a gotcha. It's not a car. The aspirin that you take is not aspirin. If it doesn't work every time you take it, it's, I swear to God, it's not an aspirin. Okay? You can try to, I'm just throwing it out before you, I'm trying to put you to bed with something calming. That you've never seen anything correctly in your whole life. Okay? Nothing. Okay? Because they don't work. Okay? So, you are surrounded by gotchas. You are living in a world of gotchas. You are living in a fantasy world. You are living in a world of holograms or something, you know? It's all fake cars and fake friends and fake relationships and fake medicines and And you put up with, at least be a little dissatisfied. You know? I mean, if someone comes from another planet and says, it could be different. You know? Every car you ever bought could work forever without gas. You know? No, I mean, if you said 20 years ago, you could communicate instantaneously with everybody on the planet for free, you'd laugh at the person. You'd say, not possible. You would, the internet's a good example of potential. You know, like, try to grasp that. Okay, I'll tell you, this is the last thing, okay? The thing we remember Grant for before he went into retreat.
It's Becky.
Yeah, okay, the big contribution, we can remember something, is to a class. He's a great student, and he said a very beautiful thing. He said, Geshe-la, you got to see this comedy act that was on Letterman, or I don't know the guy's name, Letterman? Yeah, whatever. And I said, you know, people constantly send me links to things, and I get CDs all the time. I have a whole stack of CDs that people thought was important music, and I save them, and then once a year I play them. And I have a 10-second test. I listen to any 10 seconds of it, and if it's not good, I just throw it out. You know, I listen to the next one. So anyway, he sends me a link, and I'm like, okay, Grant, thanks, you know. But I actually looked at it. And so it's this guy, he's a comedian, he sits down, and he's talking to some game show, what do you call it, tonight show host? Talk show host. And the guy says, the comedian is saying, I don't do it very well, but he's saying, look, you know, the world's a little special. You know, the world's, it's a pretty amazing world, you know. And like, I was on a plane the other day, and I'm sitting next to this guy, and he's working on his laptop. And then the stewardess comes on and says, we're proud to announce that American Airlines is the first airline to have wireless in the plane while you're flying. You know, so the guy's like, oh, great, wireless, you know. And he's watching the guy next to him. The guy next to him is all excited. He's like, oh, wireless on a plane. This is fantastic, you know. I can get on Facebook, you know. And he's like, you know? And he's like clicking, you know. And then he's like clicking. And then he starts banging on the keys, you know. And, the guy said, what's wrong? And he says, isn't it working? He says, yeah, it's working, but it's slow. You know, it's slow, you know. And then the other guy is like, but no plane ever had internet ever before. You're on a plane that has internet for the first time in history. You have, but it's goddamn slow. You know? And then the guy says, take it easy, man. Look, that the signal goes to a satellite, okay? It comes back down to the airplane from a satellite. Give it some goddamn time already. You know? It's a long way to go. You know? It's got to go up to outer space, hit this little satellite. How it hits a little satellite out of the whole space and then it comes back to this plane and you're on Facebook. So if it's a little slow, just deal with it already. You know? And then he says, and by the way, you're flying through the goddamn air in a chair made of steel, of iron in an iron chair. If of all the people who lived on this planet in history, you are flying through the air in a chair made of iron. Like, be a little appreciative. You know, it was nice. But what's it mean for us? No, it means big things can happen. Strange, weird things can happen. Don't think there can't be a day when all the aspirins work. And when a car that doesn't work is unknown, there's no word for a car that's broken or a car that doesn't start. Like, if we understood how things work, if the cars are coming from cars, then, okay, you can live on your planet A, and you can live like you are, hit or miss, gambling, and then dying because you didn't do the gamble right, right? You can go on like that. If things were coming from themselves, it's not so, what do you call it, tragic. But they're not. The things are coming from you. And then to put up with a world where you get killed at the end and you lose everything, that's a tragedy. That's a huge tragedy, you know? And people on our planet, we're like, you know, try to work it out. Try to understand emptiness, right? And then those, don't tell me things can't change radically. You know, don't tell me that anybody in the world for free can contact another person in the world instantaneously, right? In any language, you got Google Translator? I have whole conversations with people from the Ukraine, and it always ends with, I did this on Google Translator, please excuse if it's not quite right, you know? They just type Ukrainian into Google Translator, and they hit a button, and it changes it into this really interesting English. No, but we are working. We're doing projects together. And, you know, every once in a while there's some weird sentence, but isn't that amazing? Now, if you use Google Translator, it doesn't even matter if you don't speak the person's language. You can have instant, and they have Chinese. You can do anything. So instantaneous communication between people of different languages in any part of the world for free. Yeah. Yeah, it does. You paste it into some word. You cut and paste, 300-word limit, okay? It's a little cumbersome. Cumbersome if you're doing an encyclopedia article. But don't tell me weird stuff can't happen, you know? In your lifetime. You must have some really weird karma because in your lifetime, this has happened in your lifetime, okay? You must be something special because this thing, which never existed in 50,000 years of recorded history, has happened in a few years of your life. So don't tell me you can't take it a little further. All right? Okay. Have a nice bed time. We'll do this more tomorrow. Okay.